Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel on the show as always. We're talking wild cards. What's going to decide, make or break the Oregon football season for 2026 on this summer edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast? Eric, we've already done the first two, the most confident, the least confident for the offense, for the defense. Now it's time to what's going to basically make or break this season. And I think let's start on the offensive side of the football. I'll let you go first, but before you share yours, did this feel difficult at all thinking about at least offensively? I think the offense is going to be really good. I think by the end of the season, it's going to be really hard to find a weak point. So finding a make or break at any point in the year, maybe outside of September, to me proved kind of hard.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I think there's a couple ways to look at it, but how I've chose to approach it is, I guess I'll just jump in. I think it's Dante Moore, and I think it's what is the ceiling with him at quarterback? Like what really is it? Because I think at times last year it felt like it's, you know, a well-oiled machine. It's an offense that was operating, you know, up to standard, above standard. I mean, I think about that Rutgers game, which basically shattered or got close to shattering school records. And you know, every time they touched the football, it was a drive down the field, whether it be explosive plays, a lot of explosives in that game, but also, you know, long drawn out drives. I think about that game, right? You think about, you know, I think even the way the offense performed, you know, late in the season there, like against USC or against Minnesota, some of those moments, you just kind of felt like, okay, it's clicking. James Madison early in that game, you know, before things kind of got wonky late when they kind of made some, you know, put some reserves in on defense and that sort of changed the narratives. People forget the offense was incredibly good in that game for a CFP game. I understand the competition, et cetera. There were moments is my point. And then there were also moments that were pretty unsavory, I think, with Dante. And you, I mean, it's really easy to start with the Indiana games. We probably talked that out plenty, but it needs to be said, like, turns the ball over, had issues with sacks, seemed like he struggled to see the field, to kind of understand where to go with the football. I even thought, like, against Texas Tech and Penn State, at parts of those games, I understand the overtime against Penn State, the fourth quarter, second half, I should say, and overtime, there were some really nice moments to get that win, but, like, they had a really hard time scoring touchdowns against, I understand, a really awesome Texas Tech defense, but those are the type of defenses you're going to face in the College Football Playoff. That was why that game was played, right? This is an elite, elite defensive front. The Oregon offense had a really hard time. Defense got it done, right? They went in a shutout. But there's just – you kind of stack it up here, and there's just reasons to believe, like, on both sides of this, that, hey, he is fifth in the Heisman Trophy race, projected to be first or second or third, somewhere in that range in the NFL draft in 2027. Would it shock any of us if he's Oregon's second Heisman Trophy winner? I'd say it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't come out of left field. At the same time, I also think you can go into the season going, like, he needs to play significantly better for this offense to do the things we talked about, you know, in our previous podcast, to reach a 40 point per game clip, to you know, to incorporate all of these pieces at a high level. So I think he is a wild card for me. I think on one hand, I feel really, really good about what he showed against lesser competition. But on the other hand, and it's really hard to ignore, the last time we saw this team play football, you know, in mid-January in Atlanta, to ignore the fact that Dante started really poorly in that game, got the offense in such effort, put everybody really in a hole. And Indiana is not a team you're going to be able to dig yourself out of. And that's kind of the game ended almost essentially on the first snap of the game on the pick six from where I'm sitting. So There's room for improvement, room for growth. We know he's kind of bought in on all that stuff. I love everything we've heard this offseason. I just still think it's worth kind of earmarking. Got to wait and see him prove that he's really at that level against the best teams in the country.
Yeah, you're right. Offensively, go back to the two games that they lost in 2025, and Dante Moore wasn't performing at a high level. And we can argue that maybe that was in part because of his play. Maybe it was in part because of those around him not playing well.
Sure. There are other factors.
Regardless, it mattered. It impacted. And he wasn't there. And so I agree with you. Dante Moore is what will make or break this team. I want to have that be my selection. I won't do it just because I want to provide a second opinion of something else to touch on. But you're right. Like if he doesn't perform well or Oregon can't protect him well, mm-hmm. this offense doesn't reach its potential, doesn't reach its max abilities, and the season doesn't go where it should go. And he needs to be better in games. I mean, that I'll throw out the Wisconsin and the Iowa games because of weather, mm-hmm. But the Indiana games defensively, he looked, you know, when he had to face those two teams against Texas Tech as well, things just didn't feel comfortable for him. And so that's where you look at and say some of the things around him impacted it, but also you need to be better. You need to be able to raise above the, you know, if you're a Heisman caliber quarterback, or if you're the first pick in the draft, or you're just the best player on the basketball court or the football court, what have you, football field, what have you, you've got to be able to lift up your teammates and carry them to the finish line when maybe they need that support. And that's where we're looking at for Dante Moore. Like, yeah, you can do it when you're playing the good teams or worse, but when you're playing the equals, the elites, can you carry your team in a game when they need you to carry them? I think he did that at times last year, but you want to see it more, I think, in 2026.
Yeah, I agree.
So for me, I think what will make or break the offense is, much to what I said about the defensive front seven or front four last podcast, you need the backup at the skill positions. You need a couple of these guys to really elevate themselves. Who's going to be the second tight end behind Jamari Johnson?
Sure.
He can't do it by himself. Even if they deploy less two tight end, three tight end sets in 2026 than what they did in 2025, which, you know, Dan Lanning, Drew Maringer, they've all basically said, like, hey, this year's version is going to be different. We're not probably going to run a ton of three tight end sets. They've already come out and said that, at least initially. But even with the fewer snap counts for the whole room, who steps up as the number two guy? He can't do it by himself. Jamari Johnson, he needs help. And then DeCorian Moore, J-Mac, Evan Stewart are your three top guys at receiver. But as we saw last season, injuries will happen. And I will not be surprised one bit if one of those guys deals with some kind of injury or setback during 2026 season. Maybe it's not the entire year. Maybe it's just 2 or 3 weeks. But on top of that, you need more than three guys. Who's going to be the fourth guy? Who's going to be the fifth guy? And if last season, you know, J-Mac stepped up in a huge way, Malik Benson stepped up in a huge way, and they were ready and answered the call when called upon to carry this offense into the playoffs and win a game in the college football playoff, win a second game in the college football playoff. And those were guys that weren't expected to have big roles or the roles that they ended up having at the end of the season when the year started. So you need the Gatlin Bears. You need the Jalen Lotts. You need the Iverson Hooks. You need those guys to step up and be ready when called upon, because at some point you won't be at full strength. And the separators from the good teams to the championship teams are when – the injury bug hits, or if illness hits, or what have you, adversity hits your program, the guys that are fourth, fifth, sixth on the depth chart are ready. And not only are they ready for the moment, they perform at the high level like a starter would.
No, I'm happy you pointed some of that out, because it's really easy to look at the first line for Oregon's skill talent and be just, I mean, enthusiastic, to be excited, to look at it and say, this is as good as we've seen it at this school across the board ever, maybe, right? I mean, I was just this last week doing a couple content items where I broke down the top, you know, or I should say the 1,000-yard receivers the school's produced, the 1,000-yard rushers. Like, there's not always a lot of overlap there. And when there was overlap, it wasn't necessarily like the best of the best, right? Like, Oregon just historically hasn't had a lot of 1,000-yard seasons as a receiver. So that exercise is kind of different, but you just kind of looked through these teams and, you know, you got LaMichael James, but do you really feel like Jeff Mail is an elite superstar caliber player? I know Oregon fan. There's a lot of fans on here who love Jeff Mail. I'm not trying to take a shot. I'm just saying, like, would you, if you could put Jeff Mail on this year's team, where does he fit in amongst this group, right? So my point is, you know, you've got all of this top tier stuff on the top line, which I think is as good as we've seen. What do we have below it, right? There's a lot of questions there. And you know, I think it was a real benefit a year ago with Malik, and maybe Iverson Hooks is this player, but to have Malik Benson kind of waiting in the wings as sort of an unknown, but at least a veteran, proven kind of player. I know he had kind of up and down production, that mostly down at Florida State and Bama, but you knew there was a lot of physical talent. There are guys on this year's team that you feel that way about, but similar to Benson, like, you have to prove it. So you hope that these top lines, like, I would love to watch a full season of football where Jordan Davis and De'Aaron Hill Jr. are healthy all season, and DeCorian Moore, Evan Stewart, and Jeremiah McClellan are your receivers all season, and Jomari Johnson's your tight end all season, and those guys don't miss any time, and they're awesome together, and everything clicks, and Oregon goes out and just dominates every team. But to the point, that's not always the reality, and you do have to carry more players that carry some value. And there's just questions at every one of those spots. You didn't even mention it, but running back after Hill and Davison, like, it's a shrug emoji right now of who you would expect to step into, you know, the number three role, or, again, knock on wood, if there was one of those players was out for an extended period of time, who would that player be? Like, that's a situation you have to be aware of. So I'm with you. The depth of this team, especially coming off 25, where it was so valuable, super important part of this offense.
Defensively, let's shift over now where we want to go defensively. Make or break, I think it's the linebackers, right? Mm-hmm. You highlighted it on the last podcast, and I'm going to expand it not just on Jerry Mixon and Devin Jackson, but who lands, who plays, what's their impact behind those two guys. I think this is a group that there's a lot of eyeballs here, and Mike Olowski, Oregon's linebackers coach, I've said it before multiple times on this podcast that I think his track record has shown that he deserves the benefit of the doubt. He deserves the trust. His development of this position with guys that weren't simply linebackers and got them into the NFL is pretty impressive. But nonetheless, you look at the group and go, Jerry Mixon was a proven player last year. It's kind of like the Robin to Batman of Bryce Betcher. Now it's his turn to elevate into the lead role. Is he ready for that role? I think he is, but there's a little bit of uncertainty there.
Sure.
Devin Jackson, the three years of injuries and the lack of production every single year going down is a stark concern to me. And now he's being asked to be a starter again. A couple of years ago, he was expected to be one. It didn't really materialize. And I think that's kind of where Bryce Betcher's rise came from a couple of years ago. And then behind them, it's a mystery of what they have. We really just don't know because of we haven't been into practice. The games last season, guys kind of played here and there and minimal impact. And then if they aren't a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore or injuries kept them out last season, they're newcomers. They're Braylon Hodge and Tristan Phillips, who are true freshmen. Lanning and Michalowski and Hampton have elected for the second year in a row not to go to the portal to load up with some experience or some talent or both at this unit. They're banking on their development, and as they should. I mean, the track record shows across the board positionally that Oregon develops its players and finds talent. But to me, this is what's going to swing Oregon being a, hey, you got to win some shootouts. You got to win some games. Maybe that, you know, you don't have the defense to carry you. Or the other way of, hey, your offense really just needs to score 20 points because more than likely your defense is going to give up 17 per game because they're so stout up front. The back end is covered with a bunch of athletes, and then your linebackers are just a bunch of dudes making plays. I just look at the linebacker group, and you said it best, I think, last podcast of really, really high ceiling. Like, they could be maybe the best group we've seen in a long time. But it also could be the complete opposite, and it could be a hodgepodge of a rolling rotation, trying to find the right combination just that never really works. And I think because of that, that's why I think it's the make or break.
linebacker play is so important in the Big Ten as well.
Yes.
Not to say it's not important in the Pac-12 or other conferences, but just with the way that these offenses operate. Yeah, it is. It is. That's a good way of putting it. And to the point we've made here, you know, when it wasn't good last year, it was pretty bad. And there were moments where it was pretty clear that there were deficiencies. And you go into this season feeling so good about the defensive line, feeling really good about the secondary. You know opposing teams are going to try to game plan to go after these guys. They're going to try to find the weak link and try to pick on them. And now it's a matter of just athletically and schematically and, you know, I guess intuitively, like how do these guys and this team at the second level respond? And I'm again pretty confident this will be not a disaster and not a total mess and a real problem, just because there are some really highly regarded younger players on this team. These veterans have at least flashed at times, but like you go into a game with Michigan, you go into a game with Ohio State, you go into a game, you know, even with like an Illinois or someone of that caliber, you know, a team that may be ranked at that point in the season, and just with how they've played a game. And I know Ohio State's maybe runs counter a little bit, but Bo Jackson was one of the top running backs in this conference last year. And Michigan had two all conference running backs a season ago. I think one of them is transferred, but still like there's a lot of talent at that position, and with the way these teams operate, you cannot miss at linebacker. So yeah, I agree. That's a really good one. For me, it's what's the growth of these freshman to sophomore defensive back starters? And I'll even include a couple of these younger players that weren't starters last year, but I'm talking about Brandon Finney Jr., I'm talking about Ife Obadegu, I'm talking about Aaron Flowers. I'll include Naeem Offord. I'll include I guess like a Dorian Brew or a Trey McNutt. But some of these guys have now been in the program for a year. I guess a couple of those guys were redshirt freshmen last year. So this is year three now as opposed to year two. But I'm clumping these freshmen to sophomore guys together and just saying there needs to be growth. They need to be better. You know, Matt, you picked them as the group you're most confident in, you know, combined with the pass rush of they should be really good back there. I totally agree. There's reason to believe that they'll be really good. And as we both know, oftentimes the biggest growth for a player is year one as a starter to year two. And so for these three players, and again, some of these backups, like what's that growth look like? Does it really feel like they've taken a step? And like, in particular, I'm curious of Obadegu and of Flowers, because we've talked about both of them. I think a lot of highs, some lows, some pretty clear deficiencies to work on. You know, Obadegu was too many penalties. Flowers, it was getting beaten coverage, especially over the top. How do they operate there? What kind of growth do they see in terms of improving? Do they go from being, you know, average to slightly above average starters to being all conference caliber players? Like, is that growth there? Because I think if it is, and there's reason to be optimistic, it should be. The secondary, which again for much of last season was among the best statistically in the country, and then had a couple, you know, had the USC game, had the second Indiana game with where Mendoza went after them. But even think about like the James Madison game had some kind of not fantastic moments, but there were some real highs here. Like I go back to, and I hate to keep bringing up Rutgers, it was a terrible game, but while the offense was dominating, remember the lead up to that game, Matt, was all these big time outside receivers, the size for Rutgers, and they just shut those guys down. Those guys did nothing. Absolutely nothing in that game, right? And some of those guys are, all conference caliber players. They were able to lock it down. So we know that there's a high level here already. What's that next step look like? And I'm really fascinated to see with those players because, you know, I pointed out Obadegu and Flowers in particular because I've also brought up the idea that those guys' jobs aren't necessarily like locked in totally safe because there are younger players on this team that are coming for them. So there should be a reason to see them kind of even take another step. But I don't know. What do you think of those players? I'm really fascinated by, and I think the ceiling for all of them feels higher than other places just because they're still young. There still should be room for growth. But if those guys all take a step, like if all three of those players I mentioned really grow, And it feels like a decisive change in performance. Like now the secondary legitimately could be the best in the country.
Yeah, that I think you nailed it by calling this a group where they're already pretty good, but they can go from great to the best. Mm-hmm. And when you pair that with the defensive line and what they've got there, that's when you get a scary combination. And that can be – and maybe that's a good point by you of if the secondary really can clamp down and really lock in to where they are the best or a top two or three unit in college football. And you can sit here and Chris Hampton can call defenses knowing, hey, look, I don't need to find help for Iffy and Brandon Finney on the edges. You know, I know that one of our safeties can be back, but we can bring up the other one to the line of scrimmage. We can keep our star, whoever that's going to be, kind of around the line of scrimmage as well, and just provide ancillary support to the linebackers to stop the run game, because our pass coverage is just lights out, locked down. You're not getting anything on us. That makes up for maybe lack of production, or if the linebackers aren't up to expectations. If you're able to shut things down passing wise with limited help, you can bring up help support to help the linebackers. Mm-hmm. And you combine that with your front four being truly elite, where maybe your linebackers need help in the middle coverage and the front four can get the pressure needed. You don't need to blitz the linebackers to get, you know, that can make up for things. And so, yeah, I think you're right here with the DBs of their ability to go from great to elite to the best is probably the highest of anyone on this, any position group on this roster, I think, of how quickly they could gel, where if some of these younger guys continue to grow and then, like, what happens if a Jet Washington and a Dorian Brew and Xavier Larice and a Devon Benjamin, those four, you know, those guys are all newcomers. Like, what if they all just show up and they're all dudes? Mm-hmm. Like, and you can say, okay, we don't need to play Brandon Finney 85% of the snaps now. We can get away with giving him just 50. Now all of a sudden your secondary is completely healthy going into November and you guys aren't dealing with alignments and injuries and the normal rough and tough that comes with football of three months and the grind that comes with it. You're fresh going into the playoffs. That takes this unit to a whole nother level.
And as you brought up, there's so much young talent that I didn't even include there. The true freshman class is big. It's full of players that I'm really high on that I think have huge ceilings. And normally, I think if 2025 hadn't happened and we didn't see the rise of Finney and Offord, and I know the other two are redshirt freshmen, some of these younger players, I would say, hey, let's just be patient with Jet Washington. Let's not expect too much from Devon Benjamin or Devin Jackson or Larice or Azael Benog. Let's just kind of pump the brakes and say, hey, they're going to be helpful at some point, but right now it's not going to happen. Well, we're just coming off a year where multiple true freshman defensive backs, one ends up being an All-American, the other one ends up playing and Offord, I think, like 300-plus snaps, like averaged almost 20 snaps per game, I think. You know, like, there's a reason to believe that if these true freshmen are really up to snuff and are the players that they were as recruits, that they can contribute too. So I guess that's kind of an add-on to this, but there's just so much young talent in the secondary. I was focused on the freshmen to sophomores, but if you want to just attach, like, include these true freshmen, like, what's the growth look like over the course of the season with so many, we'll call them, like, teenagers, because these are all, like, 18, 19, and I guess 20 isn't a teenager, but still kind of in that range. Like, these are the players that should be getting better, should grow over the course of the season, and that's why, like, the ceiling for this group feels like it's the highest, and you could look at a spot where by the end of the year, like, oh my gosh, nobody wants to try to throw the football against this team. And we'll be really interesting to see how they handle Jeremiah Smith, put it that way, too, in November.
That's going to do it for us here on this edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast, the summer edition. Looking forward to getting to Big Ten Media Days, covering the lead up to it, everything that comes from it, and getting you ready to go for the 2026 college football season. Did we get this wrong in terms of our swing positions or make or breaks? Where, what's right, what's wrong? Let us know in the comments. But until the next one, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.